from Tukito LLC. It's Keto Woman Podcast with Daisy Brackenhall.
Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight, after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. Keto has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again, without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman Podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs to 20 grams or less per day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds, and the incidental carbs you find in things like dairy. Moderate protein, scale to your lean body mass, and then fat to satiety. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. I'll be asking my guest each week what their keto looks like to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we can't give you medical advice. It's always best to work with your own doctor because they know you and your medical history and so have access to the bigger picture. Thank you, Danielle Coonerty and Erica Burt, for supporting me and this podcast by making a pledge at my Patreon page. Do you want to hear your name here at the top of the show? Are you enjoying this podcast and would like to help me make more episodes? Then head to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman or hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It means a great deal to me and you will get to headline the show just like Dan and Erica did today. You might remember Dan and Erica from episode 11. I have had the pleasure of meeting them in person at KetoFest. If you haven't already, check out their wonderfully named website, havebutterwilltravel.com. This week's extraordinary woman is Sandra Toll. Sandra, also known as Keto Cubana, is a wife and mother of two who teaches theatre at an urban arts high school in New Jersey. After a lifetime of struggling with weight, PCOS, infertility, insulin resistance, migraines, chronic fatigue, sleep apnea, and chronic pain, Sandra has found a new lease of life in keto. 6 months after starting keto, she had already lost 60 pounds and reversed many chronic health issues. Now keto for 2.5 years, she has successfully coached friends and family through a gentle and gradual transition from the standard American diet to a low-carb ketogenic approach, connecting them to resources for support. This all primed her to address her children's autoimmune and allergy issues through nutrition. As a teacher, Sandra's strength is in sharing nutritional information with her community. She has discovered a growing passion and interest in the nutritional needs of children and nutrition for disease prevention. Sandra hopes to become a nutritional therapy practitioner in order to further address the nutritional needs in her community. Sandra has had a great deal to contend with this year, and so it was great to catch up with her and find out what she has been up to in a relative moment of calm. Welcome, Sandra, to the Keto Woman Podcast. How are you doing today?
Great, Daisy. Thank you for having me. It's so nice to speak with you.
It's wonderful after all this time. I know we started talking quite a few months ago, many months ago, about recording this show, and you've had lots of stressful life stuff happening. So
a few trials and tribulations.
Exactly, which I'm sure are going to come up. But we've finally managed to make a date. So it's great. I'm really looking forward to hearing your story. So without further ado, tell me a bit about you. What led you to start looking for the keto way of eating in the first place?
Well, looking for better ways of eating didn't start with keto. I think I've heard it from other people who've lost weight with keto that people get asked, oh, what made you get healthy? What made you want to change what you were doing? And my response to that is I've always been trying to eat more healthy and find what works. And it was about 2.5 years ago that a friend of mine mentioned putting butter in his coffee. And that led me down the rabbit hole. So, previous to keto, I had tried vegetarianism. I had tried, detoxes and fruit fasts and all kinds of approaches to improving my diet and my health through food. But this brought on a whole slew of information I had never encountered before. And it was shocking and hard to believe at first. But as you well know, it led me to Mark Sisson, Nora Gagaudis, Jimmy Moore, of course. And just, I started devouring book after book after book. I think I spent my whole summer in 2016 only reading about keto, high-fat diets, low-carb diets, Volek and Finney's work, of course. And I couldn't get enough. I was so thrilled to find really something that was backed by science and not just, websites of people selling things, but real concrete information that I could apply.
That feels like one of the real differences, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. You quite often see with anyone who's touting a diet or way of eating that they just rely on that. Well, it looks healthy because there's loads of fruit or loads of vegetables, and they just kind of rely on that, those assumptions that it's healthy. Whereas I yes. think because a lot of people look at a lot of the things that people eat in the low carb, high fat way of eating as not being healthy, it almost they have to justify it with the science. So out comes all this science when you start reading. Exactly. And you think, okay, then, yeah, this makes sense.
Exactly. And it was finding those arguments. And then I immediately started to experience the benefits just with the butter in my coffee, the satiety and the way that it lowered my sort of stressful anxiety about, oh, what am I going to eat? I immediately started to feel better. And I lost the first 20 pounds without really fully going keto. I just reduced my carbohydrate intake and it fell off way too easily. And I thought, okay, now I really need to go all the way. And so then I did. But I had suffered previously with just a lifelong battle of weight up and down, up and down. I'm pretty sure that I've been insulin resistant since I was a teenager. I suffered with PCOS from the beginning. And, even when doctors didn't all know PCOS, I remember asking a doctor what was going on with my cycles and if I would ever have to worry about having children. And he said to me, oh, no, that's just your normal. Some women are irregular. It's okay. Not a big deal. And I instinctively knew that was wrong. But the information wasn't readily available at the time when I was 18, 19. And, it took me quite some time to come across even the diagnosis PCOS.
The other thing I've heard with some other guests talking about PCOS is that they were told, even like you, when they knew that something was wrong and it wasn't right and they needed to address this cycle issue, even though they weren't wanting children at that point, they kind of put off, oh, we'll deal with it when you want to have kids.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Or they were offered birth control to artificially regulate a cycle, which I never chose to do, thankfully. So I was really familiar with my body and the irregularities and the issues, but just didn't know how to address it. Ironically, when I turned 30, and my husband and I were having fertility issues, I was put on metformin to, make me insulin resistant, and didn't understand at that point what that meant or the fact that I could have easily done it with a diet, and no endocrinologist ever mentioned that. That's just outrageous to me now. And I wish I had started learning, 15 years ago. I mean, or even earlier than that.
I completely agree. Why aren't lifestyle issues the first thing that happens? You know, any kind of medication that you're given should be the last resort, not the first.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it's just completely about face, isn't it?
Well, and the approach continually seems to be to manipulate symptoms or manipulate results artificially rather than see, you know, a woman's cycle as a sign of health or lack of it. It's a form of communication, just like pain. Your body is telling you what's going on, and we're not encouraged to listen to it. We're encouraged to disguise it. This is what, you know, just everything I've learned about nutrition in the last 2 years has really helped me listen to my body a lot better, and use that for healing. So yeah, keto has opened lots of doors.
Exactly. So let's go back a bit and tell me about you and the culture that you come from, because I think that seems to be fairly significant with the way you eat and potentially some of the metabolic issues that arose.
Yes. My family's from Cuba. I'm the first one in my family born in the States. So I grew up in a very traditional Cuban household. My grandmother was there cooking all the time. And it's a very carb-heavy diet of rice and beans and plantains, potatoes, yuca, which some people call cassava, sweet potatoes, and of course, lots of sugar in our espresso coffee. And the desserts are just insane. Things like flan and rice pudding and dulce de leche, which I think some people know from the Häagen-Dazs ice cream.
Yes.
Which is just, it's just sugar and milk. It's, I mean, there's like no more ingredients in it. I think maybe there's an egg in it.
Well, actually, no, my mother used to make it.
Oh, really?
And funny story, actually, I'd been away to visit my father in Thailand in the summer. I used to go every summer holidays to see him. And I came back and walked in, and there was all this weird brown stuff hanging off the ceiling.
Uh-huh.
Like, what on earth is that? And this is where she used to make, she used to make banoffee pie, and the caramelly stuff in the middle was dulce de leche, which is basically cooked condensed milk. So you put tins of condensed milk in a saucepan and heat them on a low heat. But what you must not do is let that saucepan boil dry, because what happens is, and luckily nobody was in the kitchen at the time, but they exploded. So there was this dulce de leche explosion, and hence why I came back to find all this stuff dripping off the ceiling. I mean, you can imagine if somebody had been in there when it happened, it would have been, those would have been hideous burns. So I know exactly what that is, and also exactly how delicious it is. It is very delicious. But yes, like you say, I mean, it's just sugar.
That's the problem. And a traditional Cuban plate is 4 servings of different carbohydrates with some pork on the side.
Just a little garnish.
Maybe an avocado, a few slices of avocado, which is great, but definitely carb heavy. And so throughout my life, my vision of what healthy, wholesome food was really extremely high in carbohydrate and in large amounts. And any time that I thought I was getting away from fast food culture or, you know, convenience foods on the go and things like that, and I was looking to come home to the wholesome, healthy way of eating, it really still wasn't right for me. Both of my grandparents were obese their entire lives. My mother struggled with weight. My aunt, I mean, it's obvious to me that now that my entire family is insulin resistant and should have never been ingesting so many carbohydrates. I'm the first one to tell people, I get a lot of questions about keto and what did you do? And I say, look, this isn't necessarily the way for everyone to eat, but I know that it's right for me and people who have suffered the similar issues. Sleep apnea is rampant in my family. We all have it. I don't anymore. but the PCOS, the sleep apnea, the inflammation and diabetes later in life, Alzheimer's, my grandmother has Alzheimer's, very advanced stage at this point. It's all interrelated and heart problems as well, because the fried foods then, we fry the plantains. My grandmother left Cuba where she was frying with lard and started using Crisco here.
Of course. Good American way.
Right. Introducing all of those wonderful liquid vegetable oils. So just it went from bad to worse. Yeah. And it was tough for me to really, especially as a mother now, you always have that sense you want to share the beautiful things about your own childhood. I want my children to know our culture and language, and food is a huge part of that. So leaving behind rice and beans, really painful emotionally, just because it's such a strong tradition and it's a pot full of memories of love that now I feel like we're showing love through food anyway, is what I've realized. We're replacing it with a better system. And the conclusion I've come to in terms of culture is that if I look to preserve my culture at the cost of my health, then my culture is not doing me any good. It really loses its value. So I can't let my nostalgia and my sense of belonging hinder my ability to care for myself and my family. And so we're trying to hang on to the cultural things that are good for us and are healthy and are still full of joy without harming us. And we're having to leave some other things behind, and we've made peace with that.
Exactly, because it's only one element, isn't it? It's not, you know, it's only one element that you have to leave behind.
Sure. We still have music and language and so many things, so many things. It doesn't have to be based on food. And I never thought I'd get my father to give up rice and beans. He was the beans maker in the family. He would make huge vats of black beans all at once to share with us all. But he's done it too, and doesn't regret it at all. So that's unbelievable to me personally. It's proof that the diet can be so powerful in its healing that it trumps all these other things that we believe to be important.
And that's, I imagine that's with you leading the way. I was going to ask you how you've found it with your friends and family who are part of that culture. Has it been difficult sort of breaking away from the food aspect of that and doing something different? Or have, you know, it sounds like some of them at least have come along with you for the ride.
For years, I've been the black sheep because I was the Cuban girl at Christmas dinner who decided to be vegetarian and wouldn't eat the pork, you know, 25 years ago. So they're kind of used to me and my crazy ideas. And I had tried to reduce my gluten intake a good 5 years ago. I started doing that. So that would be a regular topic at holiday dinners and I'd get criticized. But once I went keto, I just took the attitude that, you know, look, this is what I'm doing for me. You don't have to eat like me. I'm going to pick what I can have off the table and just leave me alone. But once my father saw the first 20 to 30 pounds just drop off after a lifetime of struggling, he said, okay, what are you doing? I want in. So we sat down and had a 2-hour session, and I walked him through the basics of it because he said, look, I don't have time to do the reading. I'm not going to listen to podcasts. Just tell me what to eat and I'll follow your instructions. And I gave him some, you know, a menu plan, and he was the best student ever, and just ran with it. And, you know, now we share ideas. He calls me, says, I have a great recipe. You've got to come taste this. And we share things. In terms of holidays, I got to the point, I just said, look, I'm just going to make the holiday dinner. Nobody worry about it. And my mother's been happy to give up the job, happy to hand it over. And I do the whole thing from beginning to end, including desserts. And nobody complains. They think it's a fabulous meal. So they come have a keto dinner. And even if they're not keto in their own lives full time, they've indulged me so far, and I can't complain. It's been a wonderful thing. Friends, I get asked about it all the time at work. It's the big joke. Even students, I'm a teacher, so students will come up to me with a package and they'll say, is this healthy? And I sometimes I take the shortcut. I say, well, it's in a package. What do you think? You know, did you read the nutritional information? But it's been fun. It's sparked a lot of interesting conversations with people. And I invite that. I'm not shy about it. but I try not to be pushy either.
Well, it sounds like you're a great advocate and you've influenced other people. Tell me a bit more about, you've mentioned some of the things that you found have really improved since eating this way, but there's quite a long list that you sent me before, and some of them,
yes,
yeah, really made me go, wow. So tell us a bit more about that.
So I lost a total of 60 pounds in about 6 months total time, and have maintained it for almost 2 years.
That's the tricky thing, isn't it? I know a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people say that it's maintenance that's
Do you keep it off? Right.
Yeah.
I fluctuate in about a 5 pound range up and down, but it doesn't go beyond that. I suffered with PCOS, as I said, from the time my period started. I am now more regular than ever. God's having a good laugh because I struggled with infertility. And I think if I wanted to have a baby now, I could snap my fingers and it would be easy.
Well, people talk about keto babies, don't they? They think they've entered the menopause and then oops, all of a sudden, I wasn't expecting that.
And the baby's name is Oops, right?
Yeah.
My sleep apnea was totally reversed. I slept with a CPAP machine for about 5 years, and I got to the point it was keeping me awake. I really tried to confirm it. I thought maybe I don't need it. The doctor had me do a second sleep study, and we fully investigated it. And I went from having 60 episodes an hour of like my not breathing, to one an hour. So that's technically not sleep apnea anymore. So I've gotten rid of my machine. Along with the PCOS, I had horrible migraines and estrogen dominance. A lot of that has cleared out. Estrogen seemed to go up when I was losing weight. I had a lot of excess estrogen, but I think that maybe that was metabolized from the fat that was being burned. So it then dropped and normalized again. So that's another thing that I hear a lot of people say, oh, I tried keto for 2 weeks. I felt awful. I stopped. Or I lost weight on keto. I lost hair. I'm not doing that again. It's a stage. And you have to be patient to get through those stages, right? But that fat is storing so many toxins and hormones that the body needs to process. And if you can get past it, you're in a healthier place afterwards.
It's almost a good sign, I think. I mean, it seems frightening, all these changes, but the fact that lots of changes happen kind of indicates that they needed to happen. So in a perverse way, it's a good sign if things look like they're going potentially a bit awry in those first weeks, first few months.
Yeah, the body has to transform itself and it takes time. I had horrible migraines that are related to herniated discs and cervical spine issues. And just the lower carbohydrate intake lowered my inflammation to such a degree that my migraines are gone. I mean, I suffered 3-4 days out of the week popping ibuprofen like it was candy at one point. And now that is, I don't use any ibuprofen, any painkillers ever. I still have back pain, but it's certainly to a minimal degree in comparison. It was really interfering with my life and my activities. I've missed weddings because I was in so much pain and couldn't bear to drive because I couldn't hold my head up. So the lowered inflammation is huge. I had bursitis in a shoulder, gone. You know, I feel like I'm younger, essentially, because the aches and pains just go away. I no longer get up in the morning feeling like, you know, like I'm
creaky,
rusty and crickety, right? I just sort of get up and zoom down the stairs and start my day. I also had a benign pituitary tumor that I was getting annual MRIs done. I still am. The doctors just kept saying, well, we just have to watch it and make sure it doesn't grow uncontrollably or start producing hormones. So it was just a monitoring issue that I needed to keep up with. And suddenly, after a year of keto, I go in for my regular MRI and the neurologist says, what did you do? It's gone.
Wow.
I said, what do you mean it's gone? He says, there's nothing here. There's nothing. There's no tumor. I said, well, I don't know. I stopped eating sugar. I lowered my sugar intake. I eat no sugar. He said, well, that sounds about right. Okay, keep doing that. I mean, they don't know. They're not nutritional experts most of the time. You're speaking to a neurologist or even a gastroenterologist sometimes. You know, I've been dealing with those a lot lately, and they'll say, you know, maybe you should talk to a nutritionist about that. I don't really, that's not my department. And I'm thinking, nutrition is not your department. So our medical system is lacking in that way. I'm not knocking doctors. I know it's their education that's lacking and not their desire to help.
But you can see why somebody would be on board with that. So you go to see them. They can know nothing else about you except, right, okay, so you had a tumor a year ago. Now it's not there anymore. It's kind of right. Whatever you're doing different right. In that time has got to
like
be a good
working.
Thing.
Exactly. My pulmonary specialist had the same reaction. He said, well, you don't have sleep apnea anymore. I said, have you had any patients ever other than me, you know, reverse it and not need anymore? He says, well, nobody loses the weight. That was his answer. He says, and you know, even if they lose a little bit, typically most people with 20 or 30 pounds of weight loss, they're not going to reverse their sleep apnea. So the issue is nobody loses the weight the way you have. And I told him how I did it. And he said, okay, sounds great. It's not their field, right? So, the other benefit that I saw was a reduction in thyroid medication. You know, at 60 pounds overweight and with irregular periods and fatigue setting in and cold hands and just metabolism off kilter, I was on a high dosage. I got up to about, I think it's in milligrams, 165 milligrams a day. I'm down to 60 because with keto, it just helped my hormones settle down and regulate, and it brought up my energy levels. And I steadily, you know, I get tested every 3 months. It's blood work you have to do. It's obligatory. So each time my doctor would say, it looks like you're doing better. Let's lower it and see how you feel. And my hope is to get off of it eventually, but that's got to be gradual. And I'm just pleased I'm not needing as much of it.
Well, it really depends, doesn't it? It depends what the issue is with your thyroid. And if there's if there's some permanent damage that's been done there, then, you know, potentially you'll need to keep taking medication forever. But like you say, at a reduced rate.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I don't have Hashimoto's. I've confirmed that. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. It depends on the person. In no way is keto a heal-all, solve-all, you know. That's probably the biggest criticism I see online from the naysayers, right? They say, oh, keto people say it just solves every problem. Well, no, but it sure does tackle a long list.
Exactly. That's right. And even if it doesn't get you all the way with problems, it usually helps. Mm-hmm. I would say it's fair to say that keto helps pretty well all your problems.
Sure.
It might not get rid of them, but it certainly starts you on the path to helping and easing them, and perhaps then gives you the confidence and the motivation to find out what else you need to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My father's a good example. My father's 68 and was diagnosed with prostate cancer back in 2003. So he had the initial surgeries and radiation treatment for that. But 2 years ago, just as I was starting keto, he found out that it was back. So he's got some form of metastatic prostate cancer. And he started hormone suppression medication, which is the first step in trying to mitigate the growth of the cancer. And I fully expected that with no testosterone, he was going to be super tired and just unable to function. I thought I might be bringing him meals in bed because he's dealt with low testosterone before and felt really, really exhausted. So I was getting nervous. My father otherwise is a really active, lively, intelligent man. And I thought this was going to just destroy his quality of life.
And that in itself can really, really impact how well you deal with cancer, can't it?
Absolutely. And in our conversations, we've come across that topic over and over again that, you know, dying is not the issue. We're all going to die. It's how are we living? And we don't want to just survive. We want to thrive. We want to enjoy the time we have. So that was a really potentially upsetting situation, but we happened to find keto in tandem. And as he progressed in his diet, his energy levels skyrocketed. His arthritis disappeared. He was having pain in his fingers and hands. He was taken off his blood pressure medication, and he started just having a passion for life again. So it wasn't just energy level. It was, I think I'm going to rebuild the deck and I want to redecorate this room and I want to clean out my office and I want to plan a trip. You know, so he started reaching out to distant relatives we have in Spain. He's been working on the family tree and researching genealogically our ancestors and meeting people, and it's just an awakening, a reawakening at 68 with cancer that is unbelievable to me and has been such a source of joy for both of us. Sorry if I'm choking up a little bit, but as father and daughter, we've bonded so much over how we can improve each other's lives and support each other and then set a great example for our children, because how we take care of ourselves speaks volumes to our, you know, our children will do what we do, not what we say. And so to see the change, not only in me, but in their grandfather, has been enormously powerful for them, because they know he's sick. We don't hide anything, you know. We're hoping that they learn great lessons from this. So it's important to share the facts and then celebrate the triumphs, you know. So we've taken family vacations together. I think it sort of inspired my father to get this bucket list thing going and say, well, I want to do this and I want to do this while I still can. And keto has helped him to do those things, to go down water slides and jump into rivers and just enjoy the heck out of life. It's been a godsend to our family.
And have you found that there's been any impact on the progression of the cancer at all?
You know, that one's hard to prove. The hormone suppression cuts off the hormones that feed prostate cancer. So his PSA went from doubling, you know, with every test to now it's almost at nothing. And that's probably from the hormone suppression. I know that there's theories out there about, you know, cancer growth being slowed down by lack of sugar, by not feeding it with sugar. How can we prove it? I don't know. But the definite benefit that I've seen is just in how he feels from day to day.
I was going to say, it sounds like it feeds in, even if it's not doing anything, you know, on a cellular level. It's feeding in with this new lease for life and easing off of the arthritis and things like that, which was just that having that energy and motivation is sure. Going to help with the cancer, isn't it? And dealing with it. So,
and the weight loss, you're literally carrying a lighter load around. He gained about 50 pounds when he quit smoking over a decade ago and never got rid of it until now. So he, you know, when you feel better because you're lighter on your feet and your clothes are more comfortable and you can play with your grandchildren, life is grand. The only drawback, and this is an ongoing joke, he's called me a few times and said, what do I have to do to go to sleep? I cannot sleep. I am up rearranging the furniture because I am not sleep. I only sleep 5 hours and I am okay with that, but I need to sleep, you know. So that's been an issue sometimes, that we do purposely increase his carb intake so he'll get a little sleepy. And because that can lead to some cognitive drawbacks. We've discovered that the lack of sleep can, especially at his age, and Alzheimer's runs in our family, he's probably, unfortunately, going to be dealing with that soon. We've already had scans done, so his brain shrinkage is starting. We know that. And once we improved his sleep, he has started to see his memory come back a little bit. So keto does, it improves the quality of sleep, but I think not the quantity. The quantity can be an issue at times. You're running on less hours of sleep. And I think that was a difficulty for him.
Yes, it certainly can for some people. And that sounds, that sounds like the perfect approach. You know, yes, it's working really well, but getting a bit hyper on ketones. So yes, that's the time we need to, because which is more important, and when, you say, sleep is so critical.
Right.
And if the only way we can do that is just by upping the carbs a little sometimes, then perfect. That's the right way to go, isn't it?
And then it's about having perspective, because when we talk about increasing his carbohydrate intake, I'm talking he has some strawberries.
Exactly.
He's not sitting down with a cheesecake with traditional ingredients. He's having more of a healthy something, nutrient dense food. So the perspective is completely different. And he's feeding himself something that is healing anyway. So high carbohydrate intake doesn't have the same definition for us anymore, right? Or I should say a little higher. And sometimes it's a little sweet potato or a little bit of plantain. So it's...
Exactly. So these are nutritious foods we're talking about.
Just exactly.
Slightly higher in carbohydrate to help with his sleep. Perfect. And tell me a bit about what's happening with your children, because I know you've had a lot of emotional upheaval going on in that area.
That's my new rabbit hole. So my kids have been on this journey with me from the beginning, and talking about nutrition was not a new topic in our household from the time that they were babies. We had some rules, like if a food had more than 4 grams of sugar per serving, it's probably not good for you. And, just reading labels. And I used to take them to the supermarket, not for a traditional shopping trip, but just for a lesson. Mm-hmm. And I would say, now try to spot the healthy cereal and the unhealthy cereal. And we would talk about advertising and packaging and coloring and things like that, because I just wanted them to have an awareness that they're being treated like a consumer.
Fantastic.
So, that has all kind of prepped us. And then they watched me go through keto, but my daughter was suffering from gastrointestinal issues for a long time. And at her well visit, the doctor also noticed she wasn't growing. So they call that failure to thrive. Even though she was 8, she just wasn't keeping up with her rate of growth. And she was suffering with chronic diarrhea. So she started to show signs of anemia and was really fatigued. And ironically, her appetite was not great. She was usually leaving half the meal on the plate. So we started looking into it and found she had celiac disease. And even though we were 90% gluten-free, meaning we were gluten-free at home, I would let them, both of my kids, if we were at a birthday party or something, have the pizza, have the cupcake. I'm not going to be a food Nazi about it. But she had even started to notice, and this is something when parents ask me in particular, how do you do this with your kids? The primary goal is to get them to learn through their own experience and their own understanding. So my daughter would have the pizza or the cupcake and then report later, "Mommy, I don't feel so good. My tummy hurts. I don't really like the way that made me feel." And we would talk about that. And I would say, "Well, what did you eat?" And we'd go through it. And then the next time around, she herself would say, "I don't think I want the pizza. I don't want to feel that way. That's kind of icky for me. I'll pass." And people are like freaking, "How do you get your children to do that?" No, I don't get them to do this. They get there on their own time in their own way.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's the motivation is coming from her. It's not just because you told her what to do. And most kids, the more you tell them what to do, especially if they originally think it's not something they want, they're just going to rebel and fight against it. But
exactly.
Yeah, it's coming from her.
Do you know the Fantastics, the musical Fantastics? There's a lyric that says, "Why do kids put beans in their ears? Because you tell them not to."
That's about right.
Right. So it's been a journey, but when the official celiac diagnosis came, we had to do a deep cleaning of the kitchen, get rid of the toaster, cutting boards, anything porous, anything plastic or wood, all of it gone. And I had to really go to almost like a scientific level, just making sure there's no cross-contamination, there's no trace of gluten in anything. And you'd be surprised how many products out there that, of course, they claim to be gluten-free, but they can be contaminated or there can be trace amounts. And not knowing yet what her sensitivity is, and also being on a path to healing, her intestine is still not healed. And it's September now. We started in January. I've been very extreme about eliminating things. So she's not having any grains at all. So I'm not buying like boxed corn flour nonsense or, you know what I mean, or rice products. She's pretty much eating low carb, you know, like a paleo keto crossover with some autoimmune also thrown in there. Mm-hmm. No nightshades, low FODMAPs, and staying away from really anything that comes in a bag or a box. If it's green and if it's a protein, she can probably eat it. But now we've discovered an egg allergy that threw a wrench in my plans big time. Anyone who's keto knows, like, the little mug cupcakes and the treats that you make, everything is egg, 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 egg. So I'm at a loss now for what to give her as a treat sometimes. We did find a great allergy-free dark chocolate. Brand is Pasha, which is great. You know, variety is the spice of life. So I'm on the search again for new recipes. But the chocolate is another great example. We started weaning the kids. When I went keto, I realized I couldn't make them, you know, keto and do it all at once. It was too harsh. So I just started buying chocolate with higher and higher levels of percentage of chocolate so that they would get accustomed to the taste. And now they're at 86% and they love it. And they can't bear something that's sickeningly sweet and milky chocolate. So that gradual process, I think, for kids is a nice gentle approach that allows them to get acclimated to a new set of tastes and habits. We did that with juice as well. I started like watering down their juice until it reached a point I was like, this is the last juice we're going to have in the house and no juice after this. And they get to a point they say, that's fine. We don't need it anymore. It's not that tasty anyway anymore. And they don't mind letting go. But it's been a struggle, yeah.
And it depends with certain things, doesn't it? Well, you mentioned with the eggs. And I know a friend of mine, Claire, in New Zealand, had to deal with the similar issue or the same issue for her daughter. But she found, I think, is it called the egg ladder? When you can start introducing it back after a time without
yes.
any. And they can start having, for example, having cooked eggs, but not raw egg. Mm-hmm. And different things like that. And she's at a level now where she can tolerate some eggs. But I mean, it's been a long, slow process.
Yes, I did come across a theory that it's common for celiac patients in particular to develop an egg allergy because the egg protein is so similar to the gliadin protein. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but that's the protein in gluten that once the body is in a state of reaction and you have leaky gut and, you know, the intestine is just in a damaged condition, it recognizes the egg protein as gluten and will react to it.
It's the same with dairy, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, she's lactose intolerant, and that's from the damage to the intestine. Absolutely. So, yeah, there's a whole host of accompanying things, but we know the gluten-free has to be forever. The egg-free and dairy-free may not be. And that will be a process, like you're talking about, of reintroduction and exposure. We're also doing something called LDA, a low-dose antigen therapy. It's an allergy shot. It's the immunotherapy. The kids get shots every 2 to 3 months. Because my son's dealing with allergies to soy, nuts, yeast, sesame, corn, apple, and carrot. So I take them both with the hope that someday, you know, these won't be a concern, really. Although he tells me, Mommy, I don't want to eat corn. It's, you know, they've learned so much now. He says, I'm not going to eat a GMO. I'm not going to eat. they're into it. They know the information. And once you know, it's really hard to ingest things that you believe to be contaminated or not as healthy for you, you know. So I want to give them the greatest freedom so that they can live their lives and But what, you know, the awareness of what's optimal is always great. So the way I approach keto is that I'm keto whenever I can be. But if I'm on a trip or something and I can't get my hands on the right food, oh, well, it's one day or it's one week. I'll come back. You can't create obstacles to your life. Otherwise, it's not sustainable.
Yes, it's very difficult, though, isn't it? When with, you know, with like with your daughter, when your gut has been in so much crisis for a period mm-hmm. of time, she really has to have this very pure diet that's just going to allow everything to heal. And then it might be that some of the things can come back in. But it right. sounds like it's been really hard work dealing with all these different challenges at the same time. You know, family meals and especially eating out must be really difficult. I've seen some posts you've made on Facebook and things, yeah. the kind of planning that you have to go to.
Right. Well, right now we just don't eat out. It's just not happening. We've taken a couple of weekend trips where I pack coolers and I make sure I have a kitchen and I'm warming things up for her. Because gastrointestinal issues of any kind, celiac, Crohn's disease, intolerances, allergies, there's a delay in the result to the food you ate. So it's very difficult to pinpoint what's bothering you, like what did it to you. And I need to know exactly what she's eating. She's had 4 normal bowel movements this summer. I mean, that's the point we're at, where I can count them on one hand, the normal ones, which is an improvement. We're getting there. But her gut is still not fully healed. And until it is, I'm not going to take a chance. It's not worth it to me. It just complicates, you know, it throws another thing into the sauce that I can't track. Although my husband and I have eaten out, we found a great restaurant. I'm not going to remember the name now. We were in Virginia. The owner has celiac disease. And he dedicates a whole section of the kitchen to all the gluten-free items on the menu. I think he might be keto too, because there was like cauliflower appetizers and Brussels sprouts and bacon and lots of nice. Great stuff like that. You know, I think in the future she'll be able to do well at locations like that. But certainly not for the time being, because we're in a state of healing. And I, you know, I'm learning that takes longer than I expected, which is fine. She's got a great attitude.
And what a challenge for her. How old is she?
She'll be 10 in December. She's a precocious child. She's mature for her age and does well with all of it. I have not had, of course, we weren't eating Oreos before we found out. So, you know, it's not like we had traditions in place that suddenly had to stop. And she had just seen my transformation. So she understands the power of food where healing is concerned. And I have to watch her that she doesn't become a food Nazi. Like, she's the kind of kid that comes home and she says, "Mommy, can I tell you what my friend had for lunch yesterday? It was awful. I wanted to tell her how unhealthy it was and how it's not going to help her learn and her brain's going to feel sleepy." And I just, you know, and I have to calm her down, talk her down and say, "Look, Juliet, you know, that's her mom is leading her through her life and they have different rules in that household. And if she asks you questions, feel free to answer them, but don't come down on somebody over what they're eating. You don't know what's available to them or what information they have, and they're not asking. So until they ask, you got to keep your mouth shut." And they've encountered, both of them have encountered also disagreeing with the health teacher at school, you know, who's telling everybody to eat lots of healthy whole grains, you know. And my son had a real moral dilemma on his hands because he's very compliant and wants to be respectful. But he says, "Mommy, how do I do this and keep my mouth shut about what's healthy?" And he had a project at one point and I said, "You go ahead and tell the truth on your poster is yours to put together." And we didn't get any pushback about it not being in line with the curriculum or whatever. He had avocados on there and bacon and, you know, eggs and things like that. And he you know, he's a little easier in that regard. He knows when to keep his mouth shut, I think. But Juliet's had a great attitude. She feels better. Her anemia is resolved, so she has more energy. And her appetite opened up tremendously once she was really on this strictly gluten-free, really clean diet. she was hungry all the time and gained about 3 pounds and has grown almost an inch. So we have seen some strides, and she sees the evidence. So she says, okay, I've got to do this, you know. And there's a regimen. She's got a powdered probiotic she takes. She's taking a tincture of like root extracts to kill off possible parasites. So she's got to be disciplined. At every meal, she's got, you know, supplements and things to take. And she's like a little mini mommy. You know, she manages herself. She doesn't forget. She says, mommy, I've got to take my drops. And mommy, I've got to do this. And she's just really doing well with it. I feel for parents who are struggling with maybe a younger child who doesn't have the capacity to understand. You know, a 3 or 4-year-old who's used to getting their cookie treat or whatever it is. That's a much harder job to do in terms of crossing them over.
I was going to say, it sounds like she makes your life a hell of a lot easier by being so strong and self-motivated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And she's even reflected on it and said to me, mommy, I'm kind of glad for celiac because it means I'm going to be healthy. Recently, she heard some talk about alcoholism, for example, and she is aware that there's wheat in beer. She turned to me and she said, well, I'll never have to worry about that. I'm not going to drink when I'm in college. I'm so glad I'm celiac. You know, I think she also feels good about having a good excuse to face peer pressure with, you know, oh, no, yes. I can't have that. I have a medical condition, you know. So I think we're lucky to have found it at an age where their ideas about health and life and who they are, identity, is still being formed. And that's another thing I encounter with parents or relatives have said to me, oh, they're little, let them have whatever they want. This is their time to enjoy. And my pushback is no, this is when we are shaping who they are. And their taste buds are learning what to go for and what to enjoy and what to savor. And in those first, you know, years of life, it's really important to feed them the right things because you're setting them up for the rest of life. So this is all, you know, it's been a blessing because it has pushed us to just improve, make continual modifications to improve our diet.
Absolutely. And what about you? I know you've been wanting to change your direction and training a bit.
Yeah, it's a totally new thing for me. I'm a teacher, but I teach drama. I've been in the theater arts world my whole life. And so medicine, nutrition, those things were foreign to me for a long time. But I'm finding that now my skills as a teacher in this particular niche can be very useful because nutrition is something that is so self-regulated for people. And so counseling people to find their own way, I think is something that my teaching skills are particularly suited for. My plan was to already be enrolled in the online NTA course, but my daughter's needs have trumped that this year. And I really had to dig into her particular immediate needs. So I've postponed that, but I'm a little crazy. I went to their website and downloaded their reading list, and I'm reading all the texts anyway on my own. I plan to enter the program.
You're just going to fly through it. I mean, I was going to say, you know, you said it's been put on hold, but obviously, A, it's been put on hold for a very good reason. But the other thing is, all this experience you've gained, right, and all this knowledge you've gained from this particular episode, but, you know, from working with your dad, from working on yourself, I mean, what a wealth of experience and knowledge you can bring to this career change in helping other people.
That's how I see it. Anything that we've been dealing with has just increased my knowledge and experience. We also put my sister on the diet for her epilepsy. We tried it for a good year with her, but she has cognitive and behavioral issues as well. She's really mentally disabled. So it was like feeding another child in the family. We had to manage it for her. It didn't really help her seizures. She dropped weight and she seemed to be doing better cognitively. But because of that, I explored the whole epilepsy sector of keto and learned a lot from it. So yeah, it's all going to contribute, I think, to my skill set in the end. But my dream is to, you know, either start a podcast or a YouTube channel that's bilingual and helping, you know, the Latin American community get on board and gain some awareness. I want to help people help themselves, connect them to resources and inspire them and coach them to do better for themselves. So I'm hoping somewhere in the next 2 to 5 years to be on that road of nutritional counseling full force. And it's exciting to think about.
Yes, I can see it completely. And what a great role model. And like you say, your teaching experience comes into play and you get your information across very well. You're very relatable, easy to talk to. It's going to be perfect, I think, for you.
And the biggest sign, I think, for anyone who's looking for their passion, I'm never tired of talking about diet. Yes. My husband rolls his eyes sometimes because he says, my God, my life is like a keto infomercial because people call or they stop by or they're asking on Facebook and I just, oh, I get so excited, you know? So I think that's a sign too, when you've encountered something that is meant for you to follow, a road that's meant for you to follow because it's effortless. And my energy for it is endless. And that's a sign that it's part of the next calling in my life.
Definitely. I can see it's a passion for you. Well, it's been fantastic hearing your story. As I said, I've been looking forward to talking to you for ages. So I've really enjoyed it. Perhaps you could give us a top tip to leave the listeners with.
Okay. So top tip is mine's going to come from the education world. This is a little bit of a education-ese that's out in the world of teaching. And it's about the growth mindset. We have had a view of standardized testing and standardized measurements of success in the past. And the new philosophy is that, you know, you cannot standardize individual progress for human beings. We are not standard. We are not, it's not one size fits all. And so with keto and nutrition and health, I think it's really important to have a growth mindset in the sense that you are measuring your success according to where you were previously. And that if you are making improvements on your own plan and your own sense of health, then you are reaching success. Comparing yourself to others in terms of what they are doing or what works for them or what they've accomplished can be really detrimental and discouraging. And I think it's important for us to just try to be a better version of ourselves each day. And that I have discovered is absolutely true for nutrition. It's not, oh, this works for everybody. This is what everybody has to do. Absolutely not. And the hard part is putting the work in to figure out what's going to help you grow. but measuring yourself against your own past norms, I think, is the key. And it can be very encouraging.
Oh, definitely. Fantastic. I love that. That's, it really fits into certainly my N equals one outlook and
yes,
my distaste for anyone who says there's only one way to do things. Really, really useful. Well, thank you very much, Sandra. It's been wonderful talking to you today.
Wonderful talking to you, Daisy.
Good luck with everything for the future.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
To get the resources and links from the show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you want to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. If you fancy joining me on this exciting adventure and want to help me create new episodes, please go to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. It's thanks to the two keto dudes that I'm hosting this podcast. So please consider heading to their Patreon page at patreon.2keto.com and help them bring you more podcasts like this one. Please help other people hear about and find this podcast by reviewing the show on iTunes and Facebook. Every star and review really does help. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support means the world to me. Thank you. This week's end quote is from Burke Hudson. Perfection is a road, not a destination. Bye bye, keto lovelies.